Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the February 16th, Monday edition of the Pantograph. And happy President's Day to everyone. From the front page, Bloomington gaining steam, were a number of pictures, five of them to be exact, of students at an Olympics event touting their skills in sciences and art. They included fifth grader Kanisha Vanjala performing a card trick during an instructional speech event on Saturday, February 14th, during the third annual STEAM Olympics, giving school children the chance to celebrate education in science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics, hosted by For a Better Tomorrow on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University. Other photos included fifth grader Hunter Lyons choosing a prize after an instructional speech event. For a Better Tomorrow is a philanthropic organization in Bloomington Normal that hosts an annual STEAM Olympics. Nearly 300 school children competed during the Olympics, and brothers Roman and Bram Eckhart of Bloomington posed for a photo Saturday, February 14th, during the third annual STEAM Olympics held on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University. Also from the front page, Cannabis, Clearing Old Criminal Records, a Challenge by Caitlin Bender Thomas, Illinois News Bureau. For Illinoisan Roosevelt Miles, a marijuana conviction from the 1980s became part of a criminal record that's followed him for decades. Miles spent 28 years in prison for murder before a judge vacated his conviction on appeal and granted him a certificate of innocence, finding that no physical evidence linked him to the killing. By the time Miles was released from prison in 2020, Illinois' legal landscape regarding marijuana had shifted dramatically. The state legalized adult recreational use and possession of small amounts of marijuana under the Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act, and created pathways for people to clear certain cannabis-related offenses from their records. Miles was among those who benefited from the state's reforms, which were designed in part to address the harm caused to some by the war on drugs. Last fall, with the help of attorneys at New Leaf, Illinois, an online portal that helps people clear their marijuana records, he successfully petitioned to have his marijuana record sealed and his wrongful murder conviction expunged. Months earlier, Miles had been denied a job working with children because of his criminal record, making the court's decision feel like a turning point after what he described as hitting rock bottom. It was a great feeling, Miles said, of the expungement that took 5 years to happen. Statewide data, however, suggests that most people don't follow through. According to the Paper Prisons Initiative, a legal research group, an estimated 2.2 million people in Illinois were eligible for expungement or record sealing in 2021. But only about 10% of these had filed petitions. Legal experts refer to this as the second chance gap, and they attribute it to a combination of factors, including a lack of awareness, fear of the legal system, filing costs, and long wait times. However, they say this gap may narrow as Illinois prepares to implement the Clean Slate Act, signed into law earlier this year, which will automatically seal nonviolent criminal records for over 1.7 million adults beginning in 2029. Not all lawmakers supported the measure. Senator Steve McClure, Republican Springfield, raised concerns that automatic sealing would limit access to information for families and employers, particularly in cases involving financial exploitation of the elderly. The family member who is hiring to look out after their loved one is shielded from that information, McClure said. Barbara Bertini, director of pro bono and community partnerships at Legal Aid Chicago, said under the current system, it can take up to a year for a sealing or expungement petition to be granted once it is filed. But as Miles' experience shows, the process doesn't end once a judge signs an order. Although his sealing was granted in October 2025, Miles said recently he has yet to receive any documents from the Illinois State Police confirming that his record has been updated. According to the Illinois Legal Aid, the state police and other law enforcement agencies have 60 days from the date they receive a court order to comply. For many, it can take much longer. The state police are responsible for updating the Central Criminal History Database and sending a confirmation letter once a record has been expunged or sealed. Until that happens, the record may still appear in background checks. The day you get convicted, it's on your record. They got it in. They put it in the database and everything. So what's so hard about them taking it off? Miles said. It's sad. You're still fighting for something, and you have no control over it. Capital News Illinois reached out to the state police to ask what may be contributing to delays in processing expungement and record sealing orders. The agency did not immediately respond. Legal experts are hopeful that the recently enacted Clean Slate Act in Illinois will help streamline the process and help mitigate the record-clearing backlog. Yet, despite recent legal developments at both the state and federal levels, tangible relief remains elusive for people like Miles and Bolton, who are still awaiting answers. Just as efficient and on time they are when taking you to court and getting you locked up and taking you to the bullpen, it should be that way on the other side too, said Miles. Turning to page 2 of the Monday, February 16th edition of the Pantograph, today's Flick Fact. Can you name the top 10 cities in Illinois where you don't want to drink and drive, unless you don't care about a DUI arrest? Answer. According to the Illinois Alliance Against Intoxicated Motorists, over the past 5 years, Aurora annually has averaged the highest number of per capita DUI arrests, following by, in order, Decatur, Lombard, Rockford, Franklin Park, Elgin, Elmhurst, Naperville, Normal, and Bloomington. All average more than 200 DUI arrests a year. How time flies. 100 years ago, February 16, 1926, a new motor speedway started last autumn on the J.W. Vandola farm just south of Lexington along the paved road that will be ready for events by May 31st, according to A.F. Hammack, who is having the track built. The half-mile track will be 65 feet wide, and the turns will be banked 6 to 8 feet. 75 years ago, February 16th, 1951. While some people who have city water are trying to keep their property out of the city of Bloomington, Arthur Brandt, who has no need for city services, has petitioned to annex Brandtville. I do business in Bloomington, and I feel I should pay my share of taxes, he explained. 50 years ago, February 16, 1976, Central Illinois residents have responded to a report that a group of Bloomington men had formed an expedition to fly supplies to earthquake-torn Guatemala. Dale Nitzel, who sparked the project, said that more than $300 had been donated to purchase medical supplies. 25 years ago, February 16, 2001, the Mitsubishi Motor Manufacturing of America's California Sales Division voluntarily recalled nearly 1 million cars produced at the Normal plant. The 950,000 recalled cars include the Mitsubishi Galant, Eclipse and Eclipse Spider, and the Chrysler Sebring, Dodge Avenger, and Eagle Talon. It is being made to inspect a part of the front suspension that controls wheel movement. In extreme circumstances, the problem could lead to a loss of steering control, according to Mitsubishi Motor Sales of America. Also from page 2, hospitals address aging workforce with cognition tests. More than 22% of doctors were 65 or older last year, by Paula Spann, KFF Health News. He was a surgical oncologist at a hospital in a southern city, a 78-year-old whose colleagues had begun noticing troubling behavior in the operating room. During procedures, he seemed hesitant, not sure of how to go on to the next step without being prompted, said Mark Catlick, directing of the Aging Surgeon Program at Sinai Hospital in Baltimore. The chief of surgery, concerned about the doctor's cognition, would not sign off on his credentials to practice surgery unless he went through an evaluation, Catlick said. Since 2015, when Sinai inaugurated a screening program for surgeons 75 and older, about 30 from around the country have undergone its two-day physical and cognitive assessment. This surgeon did not come of his own accord, Catlick recalled, but he came. The tests revealed mild cognitive impairment, often but not necessarily a precursor to dementia. The neuropsychologist's report advised that the surgeon's difficulties were likely to impact his ability to practice medicine as he is doing presently, such as conducting complex surgical procedures. That didn't mean the surgeon had to retire. A variety of accommodations would allow him to continue in other roles. He retained a lifetime of knowledge that had not been impacted by cognitive changes, Catlick said. The hospital took him out of the OR, but he continued to see patients in the clinic. Such incidents are likely to become more common as Americans' physician workforce ages rapidly. In 2005, more than 11% of doctors who were seeing patients were 65 and older, the American Medical Association said. Last year, the proportion reached 22.4%. Given physician shortages, nobody wants to drive out veteran doctors with skills and experience. Yet researchers have documented a gradual decline in physicians' cognitive abilities starting in their mid-60s, said Thomas Gallagher, an internist at the University of Washington. At older ages, reaction times slow, knowledge can become outdated. Cognitive scores vary greatly, however. A few health organizations have responded by establishing programs mandating that older doctors be screened for cognitive and physical deficits. UVA Health at the University of Virginia began its program in 2011 and has screened about 200 older practitioners. Only in 4 cases did the results significantly change a doctor's practice or privileges. Stanford Healthcare launched its late career program the following year. Penn Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania also put into place a testing program. Nobody has tracked how many of these programs exist. Gallagher guesstimated as many as 200. Late career programs typically require those 70 and older to be evaluated before their privileges and credentials are renewed, with confirmatory testing for those whose initial results indicate problems. Thereafter, older doctors undergo regular rescreening. It's fair to say such efforts have proved unpopular among their intended targets. Doctors frequently insist that, "I'll know when it's time to stand down," said Rocco Orlando, senior strategic advisor to Hartford Healthcare, which operates 8 Connecticut hospitals and began its late career practitioner program in 2018. It turns out not to be true. When Hartford HealthCare published data from the first 2 years of its late career program, it reported of the 160 practitioners 70 and older who were screened, 14.4% showed some degree of cognitive impairment. That mirrored results from the Yale New Haven Hospital, which instituted mandatory cognitive screening for medical staff members starting at age 70. Among the first 141 Yale clinicians who underwent testing, 12.7% demonstrated cognitive deficits, a study reported. Proponents of late career screening argued that such programs could prevent harm to patients while steering impaired doctors to less demanding assignments or, in some cases, retirement. But in 2020, the Federal Equal Opportunity Commission sued Yale New Haven over its testing efforts, charging age and disability discrimination. The legal action continues, as does the hospital's late career program. The suit led several other organizations to pause or shut down their programs, including those at Hartford HealthCare and Driscoll Children's Hospital in Corpus Christi, Texas. As health systems wait to see what happens in federal court, most national medical organizations have recommended only voluntary screening and peer reporting. Neither works very well at all, Gallagher said. Physicians are hesitant to share their concerns about their colleagues. As for voluntary evaluation, since cognitive decline can affect doctors or anyone's self-awareness, they're the last to know that they're not themselves, he added. In a recent commentary in the New England Journal of Medicine, Gallagher and his co-authors recommended procedural policies to promote fairness in late career screening. The authors emphasized the need for confidentiality and safeguards, such as an appeals process. There are all kinds of accommodations for doctors whose assessment indicates the need for different roles, Gallagher noted. They could adopt less onerous schedules or handle routine procedures while leaving complex 6-hour surgeries to their colleagues. They might transition to teaching, mentoring, and consulting. Yet a substantial number of older doctors retire rather than face a mandated evaluation, he said. The futures, therefore, might involve programs that regularly screen every practitioner. That would be inefficient, time-consuming, and consequently expensive. But it would involve charges of age discrimination. In the meantime, Orlando said, changing the culture of healthcare organizations requires encouraging peer reporting and commending the people who had the courage to speak up. From the front page of the sports section, college men's basketball, Illinois. Mirkovic leads number 8 Illini win by Steve Stein. Champaign. David Mirkovic had 25 points and 7 rebounds, and number 8 rebounded from back-to-back overtime losses with a 71-51 victory over Indiana on Sunday. Kylan Boswell, the Illini's second-leading scorer and top defensive player, returned and played nearly 33 minutes after missing 7 games with a broken right hand, his dominant hand, which was heavily taped and padded. Boswell had 9 points and 7 rebounds. Keaton Wagler scored 18 points, and Tomislav Ivicic had 14, including 12 in the second half, for Illinois, 21-5, 12-3 in the Big Ten, which was coming off overtime losses to Washington and number 10, Michigan State. Lamar Wilkerson had 21 points for Indiana, 17-9, 8-7 in the Big Ten, 14 in the first half. He has scored at least 20 points in 10 Big Ten games this season. Illinois pulled down 15 offensive rebounds, which led to 17 second-chance points, and out-rebounded Indiana 38-25. Former Illini players and NBA rookies Kasperis Jokonias, Miami Heat, and Will Riley Washington Wizards, were at the State Farm Center to watch the game during the All-Star break. The two are Illinois' first one-and-done players. Illinois' next game is Wednesday when they visit USC. Reddick wins the Daytona 500 in car owned by Michael Jordan. Associated Press. Tyler Reddick won the Daytona 500 in a car owned by Michael Jordan when Chase Elliott crashed as he and Reddick were battling for the win in NASCAR's season opener. Reddick, in a Toyota 23XI Racing, led one lap Sunday, the one to the checkered flag, for the team owned by the NBA Hall of Famer and three-time Daytona 500 winner Denny Hamlin. Just incredible how it all played out. Just true Daytona madness, said Reddick, the 25th different driver to lead a lap for a new Daytona 500 record. I've already lost my voice from screaming. Never thought I'd be a Daytona 500 champion. National and World News, The Digest. Glove DNA a match, according to FBI. A glove containing DNA found about 2 miles from the house of Today host show Savannah Guthrie's mother appears to match those worn by a masked person outside her front door in Tucson the night she vanished, the FBI said Sunday. The glove, discovered in a field beside a road, was sent for DNA testing. The FBI said in a statement that it received preliminary results Saturday and was waiting official confirmation. The development comes as law enforcement officers gather more potential evidence as the search for Guthrie's mother heads into its third week. Authorities previously said they had not identified a suspect. Nancy Guthrie, 84, was last seen at her Arizona home on January 31st and was reported missing the next day. Authorities say her blood was found on the front porch. Purported ransom notes were sent to news outlets, but two deadlines for paying have passed. Homan, small number will stay in Minnesota. White House border czar Tom Homan said Sunday that more than 1,000 immigration agents have left Minnesota's Twin Cities, and hundreds more will depart in the days ahead, as part of the Trump administration's drawdown of its immigration enforcement surge. A small security force will stay for a short period to protect remaining immigration agents and will respond when our agents are out and they get surrounded by agitators and things get out of control, Homan said to CBS's Face the Nation. He did not define small. He also said agents will keep investigating fraud allegations, as well as the anti-immigration enforcement protest that disrupted a church service. We've already removed well over 1,000 people, and as of Monday and Tuesday, we'll remove several hundred more, Homan said. Geneva. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Agarchi traveled Sunday from Tehran to Geneva, where the second round of nuclear negotiations with the U.S. will take place, Iranian state media reported. Oman will mediate the talks in Geneva. Russia. A Ukrainian drone strike ignited fires at one of Russia's Black Sea ports, officials said Sunday, ahead of fresh talks aimed at ending the nearly four-year war. Two people were wounded in the attack on the port of Taman, officials said. Indian Ocean. U.S. military forces boarded another sanctioned tanker in the Indian Ocean after tracking the vessel from the Caribbean Sea in an effort to target illicit oil connected to Venezuela, the Pentagon said Sunday. Italy. An off-trail avalanche killed two skiers and injured another Sunday on the Italian side of the Mont Blanc Massif, officials said. 15 rescuers, 3 canine units, and 2 helicopters took part in the search and rescue efforts. Gaza. Indonesia's military said Sunday that up to 8,000 troops are expected to be ready by the end of June for a potential deployment to Gaza as part of a humanitarian and peace mission. From page 14, U.S. History, The Evolution of President's Day, How Washington's Birthday Morphed into Long Holiday Weekend. Like other founding fathers, George Washington was uneasy about the idea of publicly celebrating his life. He was the first leader of a new republic, not a tyrant. Yet this nation will once again commemorate the first U.S. president, 294 years after his birth. The meaning of President's Day changed dramatically from being mostly unremarkable and filled with work for Washington in the 1700s to the consumerism bonanza it has become today. For some historians, the holiday has lost all discernible meaning. Historian Alexis Coe, author of You Never Forget Your First, the biography of George of Washington, said she thinks about President's Day in much the same way as the towering monument in D.C. that bears its name. It's supposed to be about Washington, but can you really point to anything that looks or sounds like him? She said, Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln are presented as people with limbs and noses and words associated with their memorials, and Washington is just a giant granite point. He's been sanded down to have absolutely no identifiable features. In 1932, the centennial of Washington's birth, Congress established a committee to arrange national parades, orations, and festivals, according to the Congressional Research Service. In 1879, his birthday was formally made into a legal holiday for federal employees in the District of Columbia. The official designation is as Washington's birthday, although it became to be known informally as President's Day. Arguments were made to honor President Lincoln, too, as his birth date is February 12th. A small number of states, including Illinois, observe Lincoln's birthday as a public holiday, according to the Library of Congress. Some states commemorate both Lincoln and Washington on President's Day. Shift to consumerism. By the late 1960s, Washington's birthday was one of nine federal holidays that fell on specific dates on different days of the week. Congress voted to move some of those to Mondays due to concerns in part about absenteeism among government workers when a holiday fell midweek. Lawmakers also noted clear benefits to the economy, including boosts in retail sales and travel. The Uniform Monday Holiday Act took effect in 1971, moving President's Day to the third Monday in February. Sales campaigns soared. Brueggemann said Washington and the other founding fathers would have been deeply worried by how the holiday had become taken over by commercial and private interests. He noted, they saw corporations as like little republics that potentially threatened the power of the republic. Still, a market for Washington memorabilia had sprung up almost immediately after his death in 1799, with people snapping up pottery and reproductions of etchings, portraying him as a divine figure going off into heaven. Even in that early moment, Americans conflated consumerism with patriotic memory. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the reading of the Pantograph from Monday, February 16th, 2026. Please stay tuned.